It is Tuesday, December 10th, 2013, and this is episode 46. Yeah, 46 of the Defensive Security Podcast. Now, my name is Jerry Bell, and as usual, with me tonight is Mr. Andrew Callett.
Good evening for a rare Tuesday edition of the Defensive Security Podcast.
Yes, I will fall on my sword and say it is all my fault. My kids have, they've got band concerts for the holidays, and you just can't miss that sort of thing. So
technically it's your kids' fault.
Well, you know, it's my fault going way back in time, right?
That's true. Well, did that Paternity test ever really prove? Anyway, moving on.
Oh, yes. Moving on.
Yes.
We don't talk about that.
No. So Tuesday. Hey, it's Tuesday. Happy Tuesday.
Yeah, happy Tuesday. Almost hump day. Mm-hmm. So, as usual, Bob is back from India, and I happened to catch up with him, and he gave me a couple of pearls of wisdom to pass along. And the first one is that you really, really don't want to store your passwords in a text file that you store on your computer. Just a really bad idea.
I thought that was an upgrade from the Post-it note.
Bob tells me that the Post-it note's actually kind of preferred to the text file on the laptop. Mm-hmm.
All right.
And then the other thing he said was allowing your sysadmins to launch rats that are hiding out in their email on the same system that they use to manage the computers that they administer is probably a bad idea.
I can see why.
Yeah. So, you know, that's the update from Bob this week. You know, take it for what it's worth. So, anyhow, moving into stories, the first thing we've got tonight is a document from the IT Promotion Agency of Japan. I really have never heard of these people before, but they have produced a couple of documents, and they just released another one, and the title of it's called System Design Guide for Thwarting Targeted Email Attacks. That sounds pretty fancy. And apparently it was done in conjunction with, I guess, Trend Micro. And that's really interesting given that they kind of, you know, say that it's kind of a lost cause to prevent malware attacks. So I thought it was really, anyway, the document itself is 70 pages long, right? It's a long document, but man, it's really worth reading. Now, I warn you, it's kind of a tough read because obviously the person that wrote it isn't a native English speaker. But if you can get past that, it's actually a really excellent document, and they go into some actual practical stuff. And so I wanted to kind of talk through some of that here. There were a couple of high level points that I just want to kind of call out, and then I'll go through some of the finer points, which I think you can kind of use right away. So the document is basically outlining a methodology for mitigating email attacks. And now that's actually their words. I would tell you that my assessment is this is beyond just email attacks, right? This, I think, would also help with watering holes or other styles of client-side attacks. It's not just email, and I think that's important to keep in mind. But one of the core tenets of the document is, you know, not to focus on blocking the malware, because I think we can all agree that's pretty much a lost cause. You know, malware is gotten to the point now where it is trivial to bypass even the most sophisticated of anti-malware systems. And so they propose focusing on two things. Number one is preventing deeper penetration into the environment, and number two is early detection. And I think these are very sensible, and they're very much in line with what we've been talking about for quite some time. There's no magic here.
I guess the question would be, how do they recommend detection?
Well, they actually go through some of that, and I made a couple of notes. I mean, obviously it's 70 pages long. I'm not going to do justice to all of the finer points. I'll also tell you before I start to say, not only do they kind of enumerate the things that you ought to be doing, they kind of go through the thought process that would lead you to, you know, how you might arrive at that kind of a design, right? It's really a design guide. It's how to think about, you know, designing your environment to be resilient to these things. And so from that perspective, I think it's really worth a read. But to answer your question, the first thing they propose is implementing egress filtering and proxies. And really, again, no magic there. The idea being that you want to force any internet traffic through a proxy and block anything straight out to the internet. And if you see things talking to the internet and you know they shouldn't be, it's probably worth investigating. Also, the proxy gives you the opportunity to analyze some logs that you might not otherwise. Let's see, another one, which I thought was pretty cool, was they propose that you reset all network sessions at least once, preferably twice a day in the middle of the night. And the idea here is that you want to see the command and control sessions reestablish themselves. So if you've got, let's say, a fleet of PCs in an office network, and you force a session disconnect across all the sessions, then you see, you know, nobody's working, right? And obviously, this isn't going to work in every environment, right? But you force this disconnect, and you see sessions reestablish when you know there's really no valid reason for that to happen. That's probably something worth investigating. I mean, there's obviously...
It's clever. I would be careful with that. I've seen some environments where, let's just say, an unpleasant or unplanned session closing caused an application to break because it was not written very well. It was an internally written application that had a permanent session connection up and didn't recover well from that connection being dropped by some sort of interim device.
That's fantastic. So
it is. And it caused me lots of pain when I was working for a firewall vendor with that particular customer because it just, you wanted to throw the RFCs at them and go, read this, get back to me. So just make sure you know what is in your environment that may not gracefully recover from a session reset, although everything should is not will.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think their point was more around you really ought to go look at those things that do reestablish a session because, you know, that might be evidence of a bot trying to reconnect to its command and control host.
Right.
And obviously this is it's very, very dependent on your particular environment because, you know, you may just have so many false positives that it's not even worth it. But, you know, anyway.
Yeah.
Their next idea or recommendation is to segment your network. And in particular, you know, beyond just the normal isolation of servers and, you know, into DMZs and user networks, they propose creating... I guess they called it an operations terminal. I'd say it's more of an operation management network. And that network does not have access to the internet or email or things like that that are potential vectors for infection. And likewise, there's no inbound access from other networks in the environment into that network. So that, the concept here is... just kind of stepping back for a second, this operations network is where all of the traffic used to manage your server environments are sourced from. And so the idea here is that you would take steps to block administrative type functions from any other system on any other network. And the point there is that if you have a, let's say a user clicks on an email that has a rat, and somebody, an attacker, gets a foothold on their workstation, they're not going to be able to use that foothold to take a stepping stone. And, you know, even if they were somehow able to get an administrative credential, they couldn't then in turn, you know, use that on a server, because you've taken steps to block that kind of access from that particular network. And so, you know, again, the idea here is you're trying to make the attacker take steps that you would notice, right? So yeah, there's probably ways around it. They could reflect off of something else. But if they try first to connect to that system and perform some function, you're going to notice it because you know that shouldn't happen.
Yeah, the key there is that you've got some sort of log monitoring going on too, though.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
That's definitely
automation there. The one thing I wanted to back up to, you're talking about egress filtering.
Yeah.
And you mentioned just proxy. I think that would also probably work with firewall if you do some good egress filtering at the firewall and watch for drops. And I think they mentioned that too, not
they
just
do,
proxy.
Yes. They do. Absolutely.
Because proxies are tough. You know, it's just, I see so many networks today that they just can't handle having proxy only at the edge. There's just too many things that they just think limit them with proxies. And whether that's true or not, it's I just so rare to see a network anymore that's fully proxied at the edge. Anyway, rambling.
Yeah, no, there, I think you're right on. I, you know, this is kind of a philosophical thing. You know, the Mac versus Windows, mm-hmm. and you know, I think you can get to the same end. From
well,
both
you know,
directions.
I will tell you, I once worked on a couple of networks that had no default routing and no ability to get to the internet except via proxy, an explicit proxy. It is a massive pain at times to work on those environments, but they're really good at shutting down command and control, and they're really good at controlling the connections back out. The downside is it's an incredibly unnimble organization. They really can't just spin stuff up. They can't just make things go. You really have to go through a fairly rigorous process of getting things added to be able to pass through some proxy if it can't even be handled. So that is the downside. But it was a pretty effective mechanism until, you know, you're a vendor that relies on things like default routes and there isn't any.
No, that's a really, really good point. And I think you're right. Even if you did have a proxy, just given the variety of applications and things that people have to use in their environment and support in their environment, you're going to have to allow some things, you know, out through the firewall directly. And I think that the point there becomes minimizing it and, you know, making it explicit to, let's say, the specific destination that traffic needs to go to.
Yep.
All right. So their next recommendation is to not log into your workstations with domain admin credentials. And this is really, really important, by the way. And hopefully it's pretty obvious why it's so important. But in case it's not, if you log in with a domain admin account, or actually really any account, to a Windows system that's on an Active Directory domain, unless you've taken some explicit step to prevent this from happening, a cached copy of the credential is stored on the workstation. So it's, you know, obviously not the raw password. It is a cryptographic representation of the password that can be brute forced or possibly used in pass the hash style attacks. And, you know, I've seen this happen firsthand. It's not pretty. It does happen. And the point is, there's ways around it, right? You don't need to do this. It's kind of lazy administration to do that. And it really leaves you hanging wide open. It kind of along with that, they have two, I'd say, sub recommendations. And that's, you know, number one, to use specifically set up administrative accounts that have just the permissions that they need to run, right? Rather than using just domain admin permissions because that's convenient, you know, go through the effort of setting up credentials that have the, you know, whatever specific right you need to do whatever you're trying to do. And secondarily, in particular on the workstations, don't use domain admins. Set up some specific service ID or you know, functional ID, and then add that ID to the local administrator accounts of the computers, kind of rather than the other way around, which is what I see a lot of organizations do, which is, again, using domain admin. And which, so both of those are really, really good ideas, I think. See, moving on, they recommend the continued use of UAC, you know, user access control. You know, that's, I think, pretty obvious. I do know a lot of, especially a lot of end users love to shut that off because it's a bit of a pain. But, you know, it does effectively mitigate things like PSExec, you know, which is a very common method of propagating, you know, malware or even legitimate tools used for malicious purposes inside an organization. Let's see, kind of in the same vein as that, block and monitor the use of PSExec, right? And I, by the way, I've seen this happen on a number of occasions. PSExec is a tool, hopefully everybody knows this, part of the sysinternals suite. And it's actually pretty handy if you're an administrator. However, it's become a really, really common tool for people to pivot around inside an organization once they get on a compromised Windows system that's a member of a domain. So you can, I think we talked about this last week or the week before, you know, you can detect PSExec execution with most IDS engines these days. And I think there's in fact specific events logged in Windows that refer to, you know, when PSExec is launched, and you want to look for that, right? That's a real good sign something's going on that isn't good. Their next recommendation was to disable file sharing on workstations. You know, that's pretty basic, but I think even beyond that, they recommend to isolate workstations from communicating with one another. And, you know, they point out that that's not an easy thing to do and really probably is only effective by using host firewalls, host-based firewalls. But it's an important thing because, again, once if an attacker gets on the system or gets on a workstation, you want to effectively contain them to that workstation and, hopefully see some evidence of them doing what they're doing and have a chance to shut them down. All right, the next one I thought was really cool, and that is to set up a fake account in your domain. Again, this is all assuming that you're an Active Directory shop, which I think a lot of organizations are. Set up a fake account and cache that credential on your workstations, and then monitor the heck out of it. You know, obviously, don't give it permissions to do anything, but you know, basically don't tell anybody that it exists, drop the cache credential around. And if you see anybody log in or attempt to log in as that account, set off the bells and whistles and go and blow up that workstation.
Well, you know, one thing I'd say real quick is I love the concept of honey, whatever, right? Honey nets, honey pots, honey accounts. And the nice thing about those is they're very transparent. A lot of these recommendations, I like them a lot, but they may have some serious ramifications in terms of culture and in terms of, you know, what your users can do and expect to do. But things like, you know, honey accounts don't. They are purely, impact-free. And then you know that somebody touched on something they shouldn't have.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, you know, it's a good point. The position of the people on writing this report are that these are a list of good ideas, and some of the good ideas may work for you and others may not. But I think it's useful to see how other people have approached the problem, because, you know, maybe not everything will work for you, but sure. You know, maybe some of it will. And you hadn't thought about some of this stuff before. I know I haven't, so it's good stuff. And then finally, I guess the final recommendation I'd say, and it's not explicitly called out, they talk through it at length, though, and that's performing a mapping of all of the systems and networks within your organization and what their requirements are to talk to everything else. So basically, you picture a grid, right? And you can define, you know, different networks, and do they need to talk to the internet? Do they need to talk to the DMZ? Do they need to talk to, you know, X other network? And you want to use that kind of as your guide, and it can also serve as kind of an organizational memory behind why your firewall policy is the way it is, right? Because at some point in the future, when you're long gone, somebody might not understand why a particular rule was put in the way it was, and if it gets removed, that might weaken your position. So I think that's a really good idea. And along with that, they recommend after doing that kind of mapping, performing a mock, what they call a mock penetration test. And it's basically like a tabletop exercise, and just say, okay, you know, if an attacker were able to get, here, what could they do? And how could we minimize their ability to propagate their, put presence in your network. So, you know, again, the fundamental tenet is don't try to fight the propagation of malware. Try to fight the propagation of the attack and the intrusion, and also shorten the amount of time that it takes for you to detect their activity. So, anyway, there's a link to that PDF. It's again pretty long. In the show notes, I encourage you to read it. Okay, next bit of news comes from Network World, and the title is Small Businesses Put Themselves at Risk by Not Taking Security Seriously. I know that's a shocking title to everybody. And the first part of the article really talks about the Poneman report that recently came out. And I think we talked about that a couple of shows ago, and I don't want to rehash all that baloney, but to me, at least, there were some recommendations by Sophos, which I thought were worth just kind of throwing out because, I like that sort of thing. So their first recommendation is to concentrate resources on monitoring the security situation in order to make intelligent decisions. While assessing where you stand on the security continuum, focus on monitoring, reporting, and proactively detecting threats. Number two, establish mobile and BYOD security best practices. Carefully plan and implement a mobile strategy so that it doesn't have an impact on the overall security posture.
Impossible.
It's a platitude. Come on.
It has to have an impact on your overall security posture. The question is, how bad of an impact, right?
Well, that's a fair point.
It's anytime you're allowing mobile or BYOD, you're going to reduce your security level. The question is the benefits of having those devices being out there worth it?
Yes. So, that's a good point.
Sorry.
I'll
step off my soapbox now.
You're right. All right, number three, look for ways to bridge the gap created by a shortage of information security professionals. Consider ways to free up time for in-house resources, including a move to cloud technologies, security consulting, and easy-to-manage solutions, which, you know, is a weasel way to slip in the sales pitch. But
yeah, it sure sounds like it.
Yeah.
Because we know small businesses have nothing but time on their hands. Plenty of time.
Number four, measure the cost of cyber attacks. Dun, dun, dun. Including lost productivity caused by downtime. I think that's actually a really good recommendation for a lot of organizations.
It is. And because the C word was in a quote, you don't have to put money in the tip jar. So
yay.
Not fined on that one.
Continuing on with that one, work with senior management to make IT security a priority and invest in solutions that restore normal business activity more quickly for a high return on investment. Again, I think that's, I think especially in the SMB space, that's really important. And I think, if you're able to do that, you're helping to, to use some buzzwords, right? Align your security operations with the purpose of the business.
Well, you can't help but agree with that, but I think the challenge you have there is when I say work with senior management to make it a priority. I think the challenge is most small business senior management don't and probably will not see this as a priority and until they've had a breach. And that's the challenge. Well, they've got so many competing issues. Sorry, go ahead.
It goes with the first part of that sentence. I think the idea is to be able to show not from the perspective of throwing out FUD. Oh my God, look at the Poneman report. We're gonna lose $100 billion next year. I think the idea is to say, we had X number of attacks, and because of that, last year we lost Y number of man hours worth of activity, and that cost us, we were able to make 100 less widgets or whatever.
That's true. And vendor X was kind enough to supply us with this report that shows you how much we lost.
Yes.
Would you like to meet with vendor X next week?
Yes. Yes.
Anyway.
The last recommendation is to consolidate security management to gain a more accurate picture of threats. Organizations in all sectors are regularly breached. Complying with regulations is not enough. Regulations are often simply the beginning of properly securing a network.
One thing that I see missing from the list, and I noted this before when I was reading this, is I think there's a key interim step here or beginning step that they don't mention, which is having someone who is a point person for all things security. And I'm not necessarily saying a CISO, but in essence, that role. Somebody who actually is the roll-up point person for all these things, who could actually compile and care about and communicate these things right now, within the IT organization. Now, I don't know how many of our listeners are in small and medium business. I get the feeling most of them are probably, leave the larger enterprise or consultants or that sort of thing. But I don't know that anybody really is mainly focused on security at a lot of the small and medium businesses that I've encountered. And, it's just not something on the radar. So I think that's the first thing, is get it on somebody's radar.
Yeah. And I think that's sometimes a tough proposition because, again, it's difficult enough to make IT itself a priority, and not just have the IT guy, So now we're talking about having a dedicated security guy, and I think that, or at least a security focal point. Maybe it's not dedicated, but
yeah, it'd probably be a new responsibility on somebody who's already overworked,
right? And that's a tough proposition in the small medium business space. But I think at the same time, though, we for a long time. And this is just, I'll go off on a philosophical tangent for a little bit, right? For a long time, business has been reaping the benefits of the productivity improvements that come along with IT. And, we to an extent have been fortunate that we haven't had to deal with really nasty security problems for a long time. But times are changing now, and the equation is changing a little bit, and maybe that is going to mean that there isn't as much benefit to some of this technology. And I don't think it's going to totally drive us back to paper and pencil, but I think the pendulum swung a little bit too far, and it's got to come back a little bit.
Yeah, I would agree. And every business has a different decision point there too, right? It's all the individual viewpoints of the leadership.
Yeah,
and absolutely. Their culture and their business. I mean, I cannot tell you how many businesses I talk to who say, we don't have anything interesting that anybody would go after. If that's what they believe, that's what they believe, right? And it's difficult to counter that belief system.
Right. I understand. I do understand. The last story we have is a update on bad BIOS.
dun, dun, dun. We really need like custom theme music, you know, like when there's a big news story and like they have a custom bumper sound to go into that story. We need something for Bad Bios.
We'll work on that. I'll take it out of your pay.
Awesome.
So anyway, there was an interesting development this past week. And in the Journal of Communication, a group of researchers have established a relatively significant distance audio link between two Lenovo T400 computers. And I don't have the article pull up, but I believe they were working at 65 feet and they were getting about 20 bits per second, which isn't, you know, world shattering fast. You're not going to be exfiltrating megs of data and, you know, blueprints and stuff like that. But, you know, you may be transiting key logs and, you know, things like that. But, you know, that is an interesting development in my mind, because, you know, we talked about this, I think, when the situation first came out, right around Halloween time. And that is, you know, whether or not Bad BIOS actually existed, people are off working really freaking hard to make it.
Right. Once the technique was suggested, people are out there doing it. What I found interesting is that they use software that was originally developed for underwater communications.
Yes, yes.
There's a Hunt for October quote in there somewhere about one ping only, Vasily. But yeah, that's kind of cool. So.
Yep. So now,
if it wasn't real before, it is now.
You know, I have to believe that there is an entire group of people at the NSA, you know, now tasked with figuring out how to build this stupid thing. And, you know, boy. So as to whether or not Bad BIOS actually exists, I don't think we're actually any closer to knowing the truth, right? So there is about a two-week-old thread of email exchanges or I don't know if it's message exchanges between Dragos and a couple of other security researchers. And the one thing that comes through when you read this exchange, there's a little bit of uncertainty with Dragos and some of the things that he's seeing. I don't feel comfortable after having read it, you know, kind of ruling it out. But I will tell you some of the stuff that he was associating with, you know, with the malware, was actually misunderstandings. You know, and now that doesn't actually say that the whole premise is false. It just says that some things that he had attributed to it are not. So, you know, more to come on that. Hopefully we'll figure out if it's real or not soon.
Yeah, it's interesting, you know, and it's spurring research, which in essence can be a good thing.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I mean, you know, those Iranian nuclear plants aren't going to destroy themselves, right?
Oh, we're on so many lists.
Yes. So, the final thing we're going to talk about tonight is...
Do you think they'll give us cells close together?
I doubt that.
Oh, well.
I highly doubt that. That'd be a bad idea. Anyhow, the final thing tonight, and we're going to skip the attack of the week. Yet again, I think it might have to be renamed Attack of the Week to something else because, well, it's not been working out every week.
Attack of whenever we feel like getting around to it.
There you go. We'll have to come up with some clever acronym for that. But anyway, the last thing I wanted to talk about is, you know, it's the holiday season, and a lot of us, being the IT pros that we are going home for the holidays. And when we go home for the holidays, what does that mean? That means we get to fix our parents' computers.
Billy, it's broken. That computer thing.
My computer is slow, or, you know, every time I go to Google, I get all these pop-ups, or, you know, my ISP keeps calling me and telling me that I'm sending spam, or, you know, whatever the case may be, you know, we're quite often in this position of having to disinfect our family's computers. And so I thought, you know, we could kick the conversation off with, you know, how you and I approach our parents' computers, and maybe if other people, you know, can send us what they do, we can read them off next week before people go home and you know, kind of do some lessons learned and information sharing here. So
it's true. So I fixed it by just not going home.
You know, that's probably the simple and most economical way to fix the problem.
No, I. So when I do, right, you know, first off, if something is afoot and they tell me it's afoot, you know, I go track that down. But, you know, I go through a pretty simple routine, which is first off, I patch. I make sure all the Windows and Microsoft patches are up to date. And if it's not enabled, I auto-enable patching with automatic rebooting, and I basically say, I'm sorry, this is the way it's going to be. Along those lines as well, I also make sure that Java and Flash and any Adobe product is patched and auto-patching is turned on. Then I go and install any toolbar that got loaded from all the stuff they patched. I go through and I uninstall all the crap that they've installed that, you know, that they legitimately don't need or don't want, and then patch some more. I also try to make sure they're running some valid AV, even if it's, you know, pretty wimpy. And frankly, the one that I found that keeps them out of trouble because it keeps running is Microsoft Security Essentials. It's not the best thing out there, but it's, you know, they don't have to worry about subscriptions. They don't have to worry about renewing it. It's light footprint, and it keeps some of the crud off the system as best I can. You know, and occasionally I'll run things like, you know, spyware cleaners or, you know, registry cleaners. I'll run a lot of those. That's kind of some of the initial thoughts. What about you, Jerry?
Well, so first thing I do is I usually bring my laptop with me.
Because, yeah, sure.
Because I know usually what I'm in for. I used to just bring a USB drive, and well, that ended up not being able to cut it because my mom is able to work her way into some really odd predicaments. she loves some of the more unusual email clients, let's just say, or email add-ins that come with some bonus software.
It's a bonus.
So you know, do a lot of the same things, right? Obviously patch, but you know, in every, I don't think I've ever really looked at it. Maybe this last, I had to go work on it last week, right? But it was unrelated. I think that was the first time I didn't find any malware. But normally what I do is, you know, I'll run malware bytes.
Sure.
Right, which I found to be among the best, and it's free, and, you know, at least for one-time shots. The other thing I do, and I recommend everybody do this, is I install the Secunia personal software installer, or it's PSI. I don't remember what the I stands for, but anyway, it keeps all of the software on the system up to date automatically, which is pretty cool.
That is cool, and you've seen it work well?
Yeah, I use it on mine. I use it on my wife's, and actually this year I'm going to be putting it on my parents as well, so... I wanted to test it out. I'm also toying with the idea of installing EMET on their system. I've been using that on my computer and my wife's and both my son's computers, and it's pretty unobtrusive now. You know, that it can help in certain circumstances. I think one of the big challenges with the non-technical crowd is not the zero-day exploits, but just the, you know, installing crap that they shouldn't install, right?
Sure.
So that is very difficult to work around. But, you know, I'll do a lot of other nuanced things depending on what I find, right? So if I find, you know, if I find that it's just got some, you know, some adware, I'll take a different path. But if I find a rat and I'm not up for just outright reinstalling, which, you know, your parents are never excited about, I'll use some of the sysinternals tools, like the name of it's escaping me at the moment. But anyway, it's similar to the msconfig, but it goes beyond it, and you can look at scheduled jobs and all the normal hotspots for attackers dropping crap on a system to maintain persistence. So those are some of the things I do. I'm interested in what our listeners do. I'm sure you guys have some guys and girls have some interesting ideas. So I think this is probably going to be one of the shorter shows in recent memory.
So. Well, we've had a busy couple weeks.
Yeah.
We've had some long shows, but and you know, it's coming up on the holiday season, so it's one thing though is the bad guys don't rest and they don't sleep and they know that people are distracted, so this is often a hot time for interesting attacks to occur.
Absolutely. I look forward to what's going to be happening over the next couple of weeks. it is sure to be exciting. It usually is. So with that, I think we're going to call it an evening. I've got to go and decorate a couple of trees in my house now.
Have fun with that.
Enjoy. Yes, I indeed I will. And as usual, you can find the show notes on our website at www.defensivesecurity.com. You can find all of the back episodes of the podcast there as well. You can follow the podcast on Twitter at DefensiveSec. You can follow Mr. Kellett on Twitter at Lurg. You can follow me on Twitter at MaliciousLink. And if you have any ideas or comments or criticisms, or you have any suggestions on what to do with your parents' computers, send us an email to info@defensivesecurity.org. And with that, I wish you a very pleasant week, and we'll talk again next week.
Take care, everybody. Bye-bye.